Welcome to We Got This Covered's Cinemaholics, the weekly movie review talk show where John Negroni and Will Ashton discuss the biggest and best films coming to theaters. So sit back, relax, and pour one out for the two and only Cinemaholics.
Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, the official podcast of WeGotThisCovered.com. I'm your host, John Negroni, and joining me from the dial-up dungeon, Soundmaster Maverick Hines.
Hello, everybody. I'm excited to be here.
Is it nice to be here, Mav?
It is. You know, I'm happy. I'm feeling it. It's hot as all get out outside. So the fact that we're inside doing something makes me feel fantastic right now.
It's been overheating in the internet California here, but that's why we have the dial-up dungeon. Get some shade. We have a new special guest this week to fill in for Will Ashton, who for some reason couldn't make Transformers the last night. It's a real shocker. But someone's come on and has graciously watched Transformers the last night and is ready to talk to us. Please welcome for his first time on Cinemaholics, CJ Mellon from That Kind of Nerd.
Hello, everybody. I'm also coming from the internet, Pennsylvania, as well, so I can like substitute that out for Will, if that there makes everyone feel a little better.
Yeah, it makes the transition easier for me.
Right.
You also someone like Bill Action, who's also from the internet, Pennsylvania, so we got a lot of representation from that state.
Yeah.
CJ, tell us about your podcast, of course, the one that brought you to us.
Yeah, so That Kind of Nerd is a weekly show that breaks down the nerdy world in a way that's accessible for anybody. So if you've been a nerd your entire life, you'll absolutely love the topics that we cover. But if you're new to the nerdy world, we really ease you in. We don't go over your head, and everyone's always welcome to share opinions on it. And we cover everything from movies, comics, to just weird things around the internet. John was actually on our show once before where he talked about the Pixar theory, so super excited to be here and glad to be a little closer to Cinemaholic. I'm a little cine-sober, like Mav, so
yeah.
I'm easing my way into this.
I've got a teammate.
Well, you know what? That's the whole point of the show. It's bridging the divide between film critics and movie fans.
Fanboys, as Matt put it.
I wouldn't say fanboys, but they're welcome.
I don't take offense to that. I think that's the right term for some of us, yeah.
Yeah, that's totally fine. Please, listeners, listen to CJ Mellon's That Kind of Nerd podcast. It's awesome, super well produced. As you can tell, CJ has a great setup. He's coming in crystal clear. So thank you, CJ, for taking the time to hang out with us.
Glad to be here.
We're talking about Transformers last night. I've already mentioned it like five times. And this is Michael Bay's fifth directorial Transformers film. And there's definitely a lot to talk. So we're going to just no nonsense. I just flew back from Seattle. I have very little energy. I have very little patience. Part of that is contributed by the fact that Transformers Last Night is the movie that it is. So we're just going to get right into it. Nothing to start things out. Maybe a little bit of like going around talking about, okay, what Transformers movies have you seen? Where are you at with them? After our Transformers review, as you can check out in the thumbnail if you're on YouTube or the episode description, if you're listening in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, you will find that our mini reviews this week are also pretty, this is a lean episode.
Yeah, but cutting away all the fat. We're getting to it.
We're packing a big punch in just a few things, but we're going to be talking about Glow, Netflix's new show starring Alison Brie, Friends from College, which doesn't premiere for a couple more weeks, but we want to talk to you about it. And then finally, CJ is going to walk us through iZombie Season 3, which I think, I'm really wondering how many iZombie fans there are on this show. So write in if you're one of them, for sure. But if you did send us an email, sorry, we're not doing emails this week, but we've read them, and we're definitely going to get back to it pretty soon. With that said, you guys ready to talk about Transformers?
Oh, yeah. Let's open this can of worms.
Let's just rip the Band-Aid off, guys. So at 2.5 hours long, here's the IMDb synopsis.
At 75 hours long.
It doesn't feel 2.5 hours long, which we'll get to. So here's a synopsis. Humans and Transformers are at war. Optimus Prime is gone. The key to saving our future lies buried in the secrets of the past and the hidden history of Transformers on Earth. It's kind of not a well-written synopsis, but that about
so surprise based on that movie. Really, it's not a well-written synopsis. No, can't be.
Maybe if they had gotten four screenwriters on it, like they. Oh, speaking of which, let's go through really quickly. Like I said, directed by Michael Bay. Three screenplay credits go to Art Markham, Matt Holloway, and Ken Nolan. Them, along with Akiva Goldsman, also worked on the story. This one stars Mark Wahlberg, once again, who was, of course, in Age of Extinction, Anthony Hopkins, Josh Duhamel is back from the first movie, Laura Haddock and Santiago Cabrera, Isabella Monet, and many, many other people we don't have time to get to. That said, CJ, let's start with you. You're our guest. We give you first
swing of the sword here.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So this is Michael Bay's last Transformers movie as well. And I have been a quote unquote fan of the Transformers movies. Listen, the expectation is this: as long as there's robots fighting other robots, that's what I want, right? I just want Transformers to fight other Transformers. You don't really care a whole lot about the story, not the plot. You just kind of want to see the Michael Bay thing. Things blow up, right? And it's a very simple storyline, and you just kind of enjoy it. It's a roller coaster. What's great about roller coasters is that roller coasters actually have built-in stops to them. And it's not just to keep you excited. It's actually to stop you from having a heart attack. This movie does not have any stop. It just keeps going. And I had a heart attack many, many times. Sadly, had to be resuscitated, only to wake up to be like, am I still I'm still watching Transformers? I am? Okay. Crap. I've enjoyed the other ones. There's obviously problems with them. So like, no one's going to come in as someone who studies film going, oh, well, these are masterpieces. No, they're guilty pleasures. This movie just had no idea where it was going, what it was doing. I have no idea how Anthony Hopkins got into this. Whatever Michael Bay has on him has got to be really good. Cause I mean, listen, even hearing Anthony Hopkins say the word dude doesn't like make you laugh. Like everything about this movie is just wrong. And even the robots fighting other robots, right? The thing I love about this, the one you want to see is Optimus Prime, and he's in there for like 7 minutes. Like
that's probably you an blink, accurate number,
right? Yeah. You blink and you totally miss Prime. And then they even have the Martha moment from Batman vs. Superman, where he's yep. Spoilers,
I know
right?
What you're talking about, yeah.
Where he's about to like kill Bumblebee and Bumblebee speaks and is like, oh well, there goes that. Okay, hi, I'm back. You're just like, oh man. It borrows from everything that's wrong with the DCEU and then also just like throws up a Transformer script. That's my rant. I was gonna leave the movie if it wasn't for this podcast. I was actually going to walk out and get my money back. But I knew I had to stick it through for this. So for all you Cinemaholic fans, I took one for the team here.
Okay? I feel like we should thank you and apologize to you at the same time.
I mean, in comparison, I practically had Maverick on a leash to keep him inside the theater.
John actually did leave the movie, I think, 3 times. You like got up and took a lap just to clear your mind.
Well, like you said, you know, I had to resuscitate. Right? Yeah. It's probably about the same thing.
You had to go find the closest AED in the building.
Yeah, does anybody have the Dictionary Britannica?
my wife is way more intelligent than I am. She's the smartest person I know. And she looked over to me and goes, what is going on? I'm so lost. I'm like, yeah, me too. I don't know. Sorry. That's my rant. There you go.
Right on.
All right. Wow. Well, definitely a breakdown if there ever was one. Something we should mention about Transformers right now is that in 2014, so Age of Extinction comes out. This is the last film. I never watched Age of Extinction. The last Transformers movie I saw was 6 years ago. It was Dark of the Moon. And,
all right.
And apparently after Age of Extinction, the writers got together and decided, hey, let's plan out this franchise a bit more. Let's do some standalones. Let's do some, like, let's have our own Transformers cinematic universe. So that's interesting. Two of the ideas pitched, by the way, the King Arthur material that is incorporated into this one and the World War II stuff that we get in this movie as well, briefly. Apparently, Michael Bay took those ideas that they had planned for like standalone movies and was like, let's just put them in this film because that's how movies work.
That makes
Didn't
sense.
He say he had 14 scripts ready to go for Transformers franchise? I feel like 7 of them are in this movie.
Oh my goodness. And they're not connected in any possible way.
Nope.
All right. moving on. Maverick Hines, where are you at with the Transformers franchise? And just walk us through a process here. This is therapy.
I think I only saw the first one. That's the Shia LaBeouf one, right?
Yes, that's the best one.
I'm pretty positive that's the only one I've seen. I can't. I don't know for a fact, because much like this movie, it all just kind of blurs into one big like meh. So I can't tell. I did somewhat enjoy the first one just because I think, you know, like it was the first one of this kind of Transformers movie. So it was exciting and it's action and stuff like that.
Decent story. And a
yeah,
hook.
It was like, it was okay. It made sense. It had a starting point and an ending point, and those two were in the same like concept, and it was great. For this one, so I went from one to, you said this is the fifth movie? Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So I went from one to five. I don't think I missed anything except for good content. So I don't, it's just for all the same things that CJ said, it's just, it's like, what is this? I really think they should have changed the title to Transformers: The Last Attempt Ever, because it was just bad.
Unfortunately, that's not going to be the case, because let's take a look at the box office totals. Though Transformers has opened at a franchise low domestically, maybe 60 million opening, which is still pretty
good. Don't you tell me this. Don't say it.
It has already made past its budget in opening weekend, mostly thanks to China. This film, we're getting more Transformers because Paramount, this is Paramount's, like, this is their flagship, like, franchise. Mm-hmm. This is what works for them. They're going to keep saying all of the things that we want to hear, right? Like, oh, we know that Transformers is garbage, but they're not going to say it like that. But no, the next one's going to be great. That's how they always put it.
Yeah.
And this franchise just kills overseas. It's like the Fast and Furious ones. I mean,
this is a billion-dollar franchise.
It domestically, it doesn't always do that good, but as soon as you get it overseas, everyone eats it up. And yeah, man, we're getting the Bumblebee movie. We're getting it all. And
gross.
Prepare yourself. It's happening.
But anyway, to finish some of my thoughts, are we saving spoilers until later, or are we just doing it all right now?
You know what? From now on, spoilers are up and running.
Let's just do it.
I think you guys
I spoiled
it
earlier, so I apologize.
Yeah, you did do a minor spoiler that honestly wasn't a very big one.
Not
so
a big deal, yeah.
But we're now doing spoilers. If you haven't seen Transformers yet and you were interested in going to see it, just do yourself a favor and don't.
I mean, you have just listen to this part.
Hardest of the core fans of this movie to even, you have to hate film to some extent to come out of this movie and say those Cinemaholic guys were wrong. That movie was, are you kidding me? That it's just robots fighting robots. You know what? If that's you, go see this movie. Don't listen to us, because that's not what we're about to talk. We're not here to hold your hand.
The best representation I can give for how John and I felt about this movie is that after the movie, for Cinemaholic fans, you would have to listen to this to kind of understand. But I told John that I would watch Ghost in the Shell 3 times, start to finish, back to back, before I would watch this movie again. And John said he would watch The Circle just one more time.
Oh, man.
Ooh. Yeah. I don't have quite the...
Yeah.
I'm not as good
so
at targeting.
That's kind of where we're at with it. One thing I wanted to say is I feel like, for me, this movie kind of fell to the same issue that A24's It Comes at Night did, in the fact that the marketing made it seem like it was going to be a very different movie than what I thought I saw.
Oh, yeah.
From what I saw, this was going to be a movie about Optimus Prime turning on everybody, and the whole movie was going to be them kind of battling that out. And like CJ said earlier, we didn't even see Optimus Prime until like 2 hours into the movie. Yeah. And by the way, it's like a 15-hour movie, like I said before. So that's like not even anything. But
I thought it would have been like Fate of the Furious, right? It's, oh, Optimus Prime, he's crossed over to the bad side. What are we going to do? How's the family going to stay together? Like all the predictions I have, like, oh, it's Fast and Furious, but with robots. Yeah, we're there.
That's exactly what I thought, too. I thought it was going to be them just kind of trying to deal with Optimus Prime being turned evil and trying to destroy Earth. Right. And said, like you said, he was evil for like 3 minutes, and then Bumblebee used his real voice that he could for a second.
Suddenly, yeah.
And then was like, hey, don't kill me, I'll die for you. And then he's like, okay, cool, yeah, let's go kill some people.
Oh, I haven't heard your voice in forever. And he's like, well, I'm never going to use it again.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to switch back to radio voice in the next scene, so don't get used to
this. You wait until those flashbacks to World War II to hear this again.
So that was a big issue for me as well. I think that's where a lot of the downfall came for me, is that this movie is not even a little bit what I thought it was explained to me or shown to me or anything like that. On top of the fact that it's just a glaring mess. Continuity errors everywhere that just drove me insane. Stuff that made no sense. The my best one, where I actually laughed out loud hysterically in the movie, it's towards the climax of the film. They're trying to get this staff from a thing. I don't know. I don't care about the movie. But Mark Wahlberg's like, they're in anti-gravity or reverse time bubble. Oh, yeah. I don't know which one it is. And he's like trying to throw this woman to go catch a staff. And he's like in midair doing ballerina spins and throws her by the arm. I'm like, that's not how gravity works, man.
Yeah.
Like,
nope.
Oh, God. I laughed for like a minute. I was laughing really loud for a really long time.
We had a hard time with that scene, being able to watch it or take anything seriously.
The guy next to us in the theater, I won't say the words he said, but there were multiple times where he was just like, what the F is happening? Like, out loud. Like, he was just like, where the F am I right now?
I thought I was saying that, but apparently he was doing it for me.
I think everyone in the theaters had like one thought at the same time.
Disagree, because, so, okay, let's get into the reason this franchise exists. Our theater was full of people who loved this movie. A lot of kids, a lot of teens, a lot of people cheering.
I guess.
A lot of like,
really?
Laughter. Oh, yes.
It was mostly kids and parents, though, who, in my opinion, were like the laughing and stuff like that. But like the middle of that group, I think there were a lot of people in there who were just where we were, too.
Well, okay. So we haven't really gotten into this aspect of it, but as far as the Transformers cartoon goes, I've always loved Transformers. Mm-hmm. I didn't. Yeah. I wasn't as big into the '80s cartoon because before my time, I was there for Beast Wars. That was more my thing. I was there for all of the different Transformers cartoons and franchises that they did throughout the like early 2000s. I loved the mythology. I loved Unicron and Megatron, and Jetfire, and just all of the different, you know, the story.
Right.
Yeah, it was always to sell toys, but it was a really interesting, fun universe to explore. One thing about The Last Knight is that it's the first one of these where I actually was like somewhat interested in the goings on of like the Transformers outside of Earth. Mm-hmm. So much of me was like, does this mean that like, can we just leave Earth for one of these movies? Because that's what it feels like. That's where it feels like these writers want to go. And they just keep repeating the same thing over and over again. Big cataclysmic events and just these wild conspiracies with way too many characters. Because it worked sort of in the first movie.
Didn't we already have Cybertron trying to come to Earth to destroy Earth? Didn't we already have that? Like,
I only saw the first one.
Did we? Because if we did, I totally missed it.
I thought we did. I thought we had Cybertron trying to come back to Earth to destroy it, and then like we stopped.
Fallen.
I guess so. Sorry,
we had some weird random moon thing. Speaking of the movies themselves, I liked the first one. I had a really good time as just a teenager in high school. I don't know if the movie really holds up or anything, but you know, we were saying before, Matt, it actually had like a hook and a story to it. It was a fish out of water. He's, you know, this teen who's in over his head. He meets Bumblebee. We get to learn about the Transformers for the first time. That's a movie. Like it has a lot of the same problems. Even though I liked that movie, I remember watching it and not understanding it at all. What was going on in the action scenes. That really bugged me. I was like, why is this shot so weird? Why is it so hard for me to follow? Just basic stuff.
Right.
But throughout the rest of the movies, they've always maintained a really solid CGI look for these robots. I mean, it looks really cool. Like that's the extent of it, is that the robots look cool. And it actually looks like they're in these scenes. And the only thing that just like just shatters the uncanny valley is when they start talking. When they start talking, all of a sudden I'm just like wondering, are we in Rick and Morty now? Like, what's like? How come it still looks like there are humans? That said, the second movie was terrible. Revenge of the Fallen. I think I actually walked out of that film during the last act. Transformers.
Is that
the
one with like the old airplanes?
It's the one with the very racist robots.
Yeah, and like the big set piece is like in Egypt.
I did see that one. Okay, so I've got three down.
Okay, yeah, all right. Another one under the belt.
Yeah.
That movie just, that hurt my feelings. Dark of the Moon, I actually thought was pretty watchable. It actually was like, oh, this is about as whatever as the first movie. I actually enjoyed the half of it was just a big action set piece, big chase scene throughout a city. It worked for me. It was fine. It was simpler, I think, than the one before it. Totally skipped Age of Extinction. And this one, I wish I had skipped this because we could talk all day about how on every level, it is a movie made by one of the laziest directors. Because look, people say, Michael Bay, he's great at shooting action. He's great at 1, 2, and 3. He's lazy. Because he's only good at 1, 2, and 3, and he puts absolutely no effort into anything else. Mm-hmm. That's what's so infuriating about his work.
And that's why you come in with a low bar, right? Like when we went into all those other Transformers movies, we knew what we were getting. So you come in with low expectations. You either meet them or they just fall underneath it. Like just a little bit.
And for those who are coming in and they're like, I just want to see robots fighting robots. Look,
you get that.
A movie needs more than that. A movie needs to actually, when those robots are fighting robots, the aspect ratio isn't changing a dozen times.
I'm so glad you
seconds.
Brought that up. That bothered me so much.
It's
and
so
I thought I was going crazy.
Noticeable. Because it makes no sense, like most of this movie, where it's like, one shot will change the aspect ratio. And when they go back, it's a third different aspect ratio, even though it's the same shot. And it just feels like that movie that's made by somebody who doesn't care at all about technique or filmmaking. He is just there to be like, I guess that would be cool. And it's just like him playing with a bunch of toys in a very illogical way.
I heard a really good analogy. Have you ever watched some YouTube channels with people who are just starting out to YouTube and they do like jump cuts every 5 seconds just to make it seem like there's movement within their video. But it really is just the same guy just now his head's to the left or right.
Right.
That's kind of what this was like. Right. It was just cut, flash and move. And you're just like, hey, whoa, wait, can we focus for 8 seconds on what's happening in front of us for like 8 seconds, please? My ADHD is not that bad. I don't need you to show me something new. I can focus. I teach me. I can learn. Right. No, this movie just refuses to give it to you.
Brass tacks. It's across the board. The storytelling in this movie is an utter failure. There is no the way he's trying to tell his story. The way that the screenwriters are telling this story, every level it is an F. Like none of it, none of it works. None of it clicks. None of it has any thought behind it. I do want to point out, I mean, this is the most expensive Transformers film. It cost them $260 million to make this. Jesus.
And they just gave it all to a 14-year-old in a Steadicam. All right. I have a question, and I'm hoping that maybe you guys can help me out with this. The Transformer Reaction Force, the TRF. Mm-hmm. Were they like always good? Are they always bad? Are they mercenaries? Are they part of the government? Like what was that agency? What was it? What were they doing?
That's the thing. They don't explain anything. They don't have scenes that actually build momentum to scenes that pay those scenes off.
Which is you got Colonel Lennox like embedded with them. And I'm like, oh, is he like undercover and he's trying to infiltrate them? Because obviously the government knows not to side with the Decepticons and not to do the Suicide Squad in Transformers world, because that doesn't work for anybody, because Colonel Lennox knows that with the Autobots are good guys. So they're obviously bad, right? Obviously we know that the TRF are bad. Oh, wait, but they're not? But they are? Like, what? I didn't understand their role at all.
The majority of this movie, I couldn't follow what in the world was going on with this talisman, with the Cuba character. I forget the actor's name. He was in the first one and the third one.
Oh, yeah.
He's just going like, we just keep cutting to these scenes of random people talking about something and them just assuming we know what they're talking about.
Or when they would throw in that guy from, was he NASA or just a physicist or whatever? They would just throw him in for a second to yell and then go
Buster
to something else.
From Arrested Development. Seriously, and all of that is just like noise. It's all just chaos. Even you have to get, they set up Bumblebee and Optimus Prime to have an epic fight. Bumblebee's been trying to fill his shoes while he's been gone.
They drop hints the whole movie. What's the guy's name? The other Transformer, I don't know. But he's like, you're not Optimus Prime.
Yeah, sure.
They keep leading that up. They make it seem like it's going to be
great.
Important.
Bumblebee is a great foil to Optimus Prime. He's a totally different fighter. When we get that big fight scene, there's such a they don't even understand how to build up to that. Yeah. It just cuts to the middle of it, and then it just proceeds. You don't have any sort of like the two characters staring each other down and coming after one another. They don't even do that. Like it's just brainless. It's
so here's the other part too. When it comes to the humans that are in this movie, my head hurts. So the character of Isabella, right? She's obviously supposed to be like the fill in the gap for the child role for Jaeger, right? Jaeger's daughter, essentially. And they're trying to make her kind of like Rey from Star Wars.
I was going
to
say that she's totally a Rey.
Yeah, she can fix things. She's wearing goggles around her neck for half the movie.
She swears.
Well, she says, bro, like, brah, what's up, brah? Come on, brah. And the biggest heartfelt moment between Jaeger and Isabella is when he goes, welcome to the family, brah. And just like this is what we, that character could have been something. It's a good role for a young female actress, and you're just wasting it. And you're making her just a stereotype. And it just bothered me. And then the whole like gaggle of women in Vivian's house, right? Vivian's like family. Couldn't be more stereotypical and just degrading. Like, I looked to my wife and I was like, I'm so sorry.
There's no group of women who are like getting super excited that their like daughter girl is like getting laid by some stranger. Well, and that's the one thing they care about is like, they literally have a scene where they're like, the only thing that you need to worry about is getting laid. Laura Haddock. Yeah.
And they're just like, oh, well, please ignore all the research and books and stuff that you can learn from upstairs in that study. Don't go in there. You're a woman. You shouldn't bind yourself. Yeah,
why don't
that.
You have Even a boyfriend, though, you college like, professor?
And yeah, she's a PhD. She's highly educated. She's very smart. And she's trying to break the mold, right? She's trying to call out to them, hey, don't you see history's being rewritten? And they're just like, nah, let's go back to having them just, you know, not grow as people at all.
Yeah, and that was one thing that we talked about after the movie, too, is with they have this powerful woman attempted, right? And they still make an attempt to, like, sexualize her through the entire movie, which really bothered me. It's like they tried to tap into the...
Hold on here. The director is putting these women in as a, like, see, we don't exploit women because she's standing up to these women who are sexualizing her. How totally dishonest is that? Yeah. It's a complete misunderstanding.
While like, sexualizing that woman.
It completely undermines that entire attempt to be like, no, Laura Haddock is here for her brains, not for her, you know what.
Yeah.
But then he's I'm just going to just like totally write these women as horrible, horrible characters, and that makes it okay.
And they even had Jaeger as Chaste, right? Oh, he's not trying to, you know, he's not trying to have a sexual relationship with Vivian, right? That's not what it's about. The relationship that he has with Isabella is very nice. Like, they're trying to really kind of, like, take some of that machismo out of it, but it's so transparent and so bad that it's offensive. Like, it just went into that route. I mean... The humans of Transformers have always been kind of the weakest part of it, which I know sounds really weird, but they're the people that like you don't really identify with at the end of the day, which is very strange. And they just, again, just failed to make it happen. They just failed to connect the dots and make me care. They're new characters. They're totally new people. And when they're flying through the air and in anti-gravity bubbles and almost getting blown up and I don't care. You haven't shown me anything about these characters besides their surface that I could even care about.
I was like, whatever with watching was Mark Wahlberg because he was able to exist in this movie and do his thing. And I thought it was simple. I thought it was passable.
Which is a bad sign for the franchise because this is also his last movie. So he's out after this. So like, and then here's the other part. I don't know if you caught this in the cacophony of noise that happened in the castle when he's going through the whole like Witwicken line, right? Stan Witwicky, which is, Shia LaBeouf's character, is dead. They said that Vivian's the last living descendant, which of the Witwickens, which means that Shia LaBeouf's character is also dead. So people that you know and people that we've known for a long time,
and his parents,
we get little information that, hey, character that you know and love, dead. We're not going to explain how. We're not even going to go into it. But hey, they're gone.
It didn't surprise me because at that point in the movie, I was like, well, then of course, the movie hates its own characters. Why would I expect anything less?
Right.
Anthony Hopkins.
Okay.
I don't even know where to begin because I think that the idea of having him in this movie, sure, fine. His little Cogman character, it's something. It's an idea. But my goodness, it in the middle of like his 14th like dialogue of exposition that I wasn't paying attention to, did you guys think that there was anything salvageable there?
I think the movie would have been just as successful if they filmed all the parts like he was there, but just took him out of the movie and had Mark Wahlberg talking to air. Like, it was just like, I don't understand why this is happening right now.
Oh, that's beautiful. I when I first heard him doing the narration, doing everything in the beginning, like, finally, okay, I want to know why Anthony Hopkins is in this, because he's one of the reasons I'm sitting in this seat eating popcorn, right? So he's explaining this world. He's explaining what's happening. I'm like, oh my God, we're actually going to like hear a story in Transformers. Like, keep going. Mm-hmm. And then he just turns into like this madman who just doesn't make sense. And the only defense I can give to his character, right, is the man's been living alone in this castle for decades, I would assume. His only companion is a sociopath Transformer, and he's obviously crazy. But that doesn't excuse the fact that if he's supposed to be the voice to the audience saying, let me fill in the gaps for you, that he can't fill in the gaps. Like, he makes it even more confusing. He's not the audience's assistant. He's not the narrator. He's not helping us go forward. He's just complicating things. So I kind of with you, Mav. Get rid of him and just like, let's let Mark Wahlberg ride this boat. Let's let him drive the car because he can do that.
Well, we've kind of laid it out. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Maverick?
I thought it'd be good to notice that this on Rotten Tomatoes, this movie is tied with Mummy for the worst movie we reviewed on the podcast so far at 15% on Tomato Meter. Audience score is still around 60.
This film is ridiculously worse than The Mummy. It's no contest.
I didn't see The Mummy, and I agree with you.
Neither did I.
Transformers is the worst movie I've seen all year. It's one of the worst movies I've seen in 2 years. Could be the worst movie.
This is the worst movie I've seen.
When you take in the fact of its length, the fact that it's not watchable,
we should address
that.
Gives
you a headache.
Yeah.
The fact that its climax, it doesn't show up until so late in the movie that it's not worth it. Far beyond that point.
Math, before you talk about the length, I want to say one thing. And if you ever listen to my show, you know that this is going to be a bold statement. If I'm stuck in a room and someone says, hey, listen, you can either watch Transformers The Last Knight or Batman vs. Superman, I'm watching Batman vs. Superman. And I hated that movie. Hated it.
This film actually makes Batman vs. Superman look like Oscar worthy for its editing.
Yeah. And that has to do with the length. So, Mav, I'd love to hear what you have to say about the length of this movie because I didn't have a watch on and I almost lost track of time.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I was aware of how long it was after a while was because of how many times I noticed John, like I said, got up to take a lap because I was like, man, like he just did that.
I'll go to the restroom. Well,
I know, but I'm not trying to call you out, but I'm just saying like
I don't have to explain myself.
You were like my
I think
guide
he's calling you
the
out.
Fact. Yeah. So I forgot. So we went to a 5 o'clock showing. And it was like 7:15 or something like that. And like the action was just starting up. And I looked at my watch and I was like, oh, it's 7. And I actually forgot that the movie started at 5. I thought it started at 6 at that point. And I was like, oh, okay, it's not that bad. And then I was like, well, wait, no. We've been here since like 4:50. What is happening right now? And I was just like mad immediately. And I couldn't even focus for this movie because I was just like, I want to get out of this theater now. Like, get me away from this.
Going into our final thoughts and grades, I just want to say there's one thing we failed to mention. Failed. The humor in this film and some of the worst attempts at levity, some of the worst jokes that I have no idea what the joke was.
Yeah. Yep.
Of like a kid staring at one of the other kids and like his reactions to things was supposed to be played for laughs. And like the dialogue makes no sense.
Yeah.
Throughout this movie, the dialogue makes no sense.
The humor is, most of the humor lies in Anthony Hopkins doing things that are so un-Anthony Hopkins that you're supposed to laugh at it. It's like hearing your grandmother, who's this, you know, the kind, sweet old grandmother, start cursing. And you're supposed to be like, oh, grandma just cursed. And like, you know, Anthony Hopkins gives the middle finger to somebody and he says, dude, and he, you know, he's all off the wall and his robot sings a ludicrous song and you're supposed to laugh. And you're just like, no, not funny. Go back. Yeah. Not funny.
A lot of the humor surrounding, what's his name, Cognan, the psychopath butler, like for me, that made the movie worse. Like it wasn't even just failed attempts at humor. It was just like the whole like music thing he was doing where he was trying to like set a scene and they pulled it out to kind of break that wall and be like, oh, he's actually doing it. I was like, that's not funny. That just ruins. Like I was into that scene a little bit and then you had to take me out of it. Like the one time I'm actually focused on something and you had to like ruin it for me. I don't think we failed to mention the humor. I just don't think there's anything worth mentioning. I think I laughed a couple times at the movie, but that was just because I was laughing at how like ridiculous and stupid the movie was. So there's some humor, I guess.
Yeah, we've definitely laid out the many, many, many problems of this film. And
even Stanley Tucci as Merlin wasn't even funny.
And like it also didn't make any sense because he was in the last movie.
He was in the last movie. Yep. Thank you. I'm glad someone else
one more thing. And this is something you ranted on. That's the only reason I'm bringing it up, because I want you to do it. The movie kind of addresses that the Knights of the Round Table were real characters.
Oh my gosh.
This made John so mad. But in the beginning, they talk, I can't remember her name, but the smart woman, I can't remember.
Vivian?
Yeah. Yes, Vivian. She's like talking at this museum as if the Knights of the Round Table were real people and that really happened.
That it wasn't a fictional story.
And it's like...
So in the universe of Transformers, this is history?
Well, like she was going around. So the movie sets up that it's history, right? And then Vivian's giving the presentation all the to the college students, and then it's a fake out. Supposed to be a fake out where she goes, "It's total bull crap," and you're just like, "Oh, all right, cool." But wait, didn't we just see a scene where we actually saw this was real? So is it not real? Is it real?
Because here's the thing: there is a Transformers movie. That has that incorporates King Arthur, the animated stuff.
Yeah.
But the way you play that off is you're like, oh, these are myths, but they actually happened, surprisingly. This movie is so dumb that I actually am worried about the screenwriters, because I wonder if they actually think that King Arthur existed.
Let's put it together with the Guy Ritchie King Arthur, and let's just let that go. Let's watch that movie franchise happen.
I would watch that in a heartbeat. Over here, where we don't have to. Maybe just put all that over there. We'll go over here.
We'll push it away.
Final grade for me. Look, I can give a movie a lot of credit for the good things that it has. The fact that it has Mark Wahlberg. The fact that it has some production designs and computer effects that are genuinely really good. And a lot of it doesn't look fake, but what eviscerates all of that goodwill, all of that, I'm just here to see robots fighting robots, is a complete lack of even just caring about the medium from the director. No intent whatsoever to make an actually good movie. No love or care being put into it whatsoever. No logic, no continuity, none of the plotting being scrutinized in the slightest, the characters just showing up in scenes where they shouldn't have showed up, characters where we assume characters have been killed off by, Megatron. We think that he kills the Sarge character. He doesn't. He just shows up again. None of this. It hurts to watch this movie. The aspect ratios actually inflict pain upon you for actually sitting there for 2.5 hours. For all of these reasons and more, this movie is an F. There is nothing. There's nothing about it that's good enough to even justify sitting in that seat, no matter what kind of fan you are of this franchise. Please do yourself a favor and don't give them money. Don't reward them for creating something so uninspired and so just badly motivated. We deserve so much better for wanting to just watch some robots fight each other. Is that so hard?
Yeah, I agree.
Maverick?
Yep, took the words out of my mouth. I even got my robots fighting robots, and I would still give it an F.
Yeah, I wish I had a great... I want to find something to bump this up a little bit, to give it some credit. All I can say to anyone listening to this is take a movie day off, spend time with your family, read a book, worship whatever deity you worship or not. I don't care. Just you will literally be a better person if you don't go see this movie, because you will be less angry.
You'll have more of your day back.
Take one of our mini reviews and go watch that instead.
Yeah. Something like that. Please. So, so for me, it's solid F for all the same issues. My biggest issue is the fact that, again, I think we were misled severely by a trailer that painted a picture for a movie that we didn't see. And I'm really exhausted with movies doing that to me. So I'm bitter. F. It's me in my senior year of high school. It's the worst thing you'll ever do. It's when someone puts on a movie instead of teaching a class because they just don't care anymore. And it's just so don't. Just don't. Please don't see it. What about you, CJ?
F. I mean, all I wanted was a movie of robots fighting robots. I didn't even get Optimus Prime. So no, you can't even give me Optimus. Come on.
For longer than
Minutes, and the only scene that matters of Optimus fighting was in the trailer, right? When he cuts off the heads of all those robots. That's in the trailer. I already saw it. I saw the best part of the movie. Get out of here. F. Go away. You're hurting me.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's stop it there. Let's get into our mini reviews and close.
Let's all take a deep breath.
Yeah.
Let's get some good, happy
next
juices.
Next week's going to be a lot better. Despicable Me 3 is coming out. But more importantly, Baby Driver.
Yes.
I'm excited about watching The House, to be totally honest.
Doesn't Big Sick also come out next week, too?
Its wide release, I think, is still a little off. Its limited release was last week. Yeah.
I need to see that.
For sure. For sure. Then we have Spider-Man and Valerian. I mean, it's July is looking a lot better.
We got a good month upcoming.
For the most part. All right. For mini review, CJ, you're our guest. Please walk us through iZombie Season 3.
Yeah, so a lot of people are going to just instantly hear the word iZombie and be like, no, stop. You have nothing to... Just hold on, okay? Zombies are everywhere right now in pulp culture. There's The Walking Dead, Fear of the Walking Dead. There's all these types of zombie movies that are out there. And zombies have been done way too much. What's great about iZombie is that it's based off a Vertigo comic. And it is not about the typical mindless brain-eating zombies you're used to. What's really cool about this is it kind of reminds me of the old show Dead Zone with Anthony Michael Hall.
Oh, yeah.
There was a doctor who was attending a house party boat, a boat party, I mean, sorry, and she got scratched and she got turned into a zombie. And a whole bunch of other people started showing up. But what she decides to do is that she goes and works in a morgue. And when she eats the brain of a dead person, she gets to see like their last glimpses of life. And she gets to figure out how they were murdered, and she works with the police to go ahead and solve these murders. But the zombie elements that come through it are better than just mindlessly killing people. There's actually characters that you care about. People grow, and the art direction and the way that it's shot is just very easy to follow and let people come in who don't like zombie movies. The reason I'm bringing this up, too, is that the season finale of season 3 is going to be on June 27th. But the CW has a deal with Netflix that 8 days after the season finale, they release the entire season out on Netflix. So I know you maybe haven't seen the show before, haven't really thought about it. It is on Netflix for seasons 1 and 2. And at the end of the month, season 3 will be available on Netflix. Highly recommend you go check it out. And I think you're going to be surprised that you're going to like this show a lot, like way more than you thought you would. You may become a hardcore fan, and I know that you guys have been watching Riverdale and Flash and Arrow, and the CW does put out some good content. I would put this in that level. It's not a Berlanti joint, so you know don't expect to see Greg Berlanti's name attached to it, but totally worth your time. I put it off for too long. My friend finally said, you seriously need to watch it, and I thank him every day for it. It's a fantastic show.
I couldn't agree more. When I was ranking the best superhero shows, comic book based shows. This was, I think, in the top 10. It is fantastic. I haven't seen season 2 or 3, but thank you for reminding people, because we have been talking a lot about CW shows like Riverdale, and I think we talked about Flash and Arrow just a few weeks ago and catching people up. So that's iZombie. Maverick Hines, you have just watched, I think, a show I am so excited to watch. I haven't had a chance because I've been traveling, but I've been looking forward to this one for a while. This one's called Glow, and I think it's kind of hitting a bit of a mainstream nerve right now. A lot of people are interested in this one. What did you think of how many episodes you saw?
I've seen the first 2 episodes, so I'm still pretty new. I haven't really hit the main climax or a lot of the super big development yet. They're half-hour episodes, so I'm still pretty fresh to it. I'm into it. I plan on finishing it out. I really enjoy the show. Starring Alison Brie so far, and she does great. Basic is, the synopsis is kind of short. It's a look at a personal and professional lives of a group of women who perform for a wrestling organization in Los Angeles.
In the 80s.
In the 80s. So I was going to say, so what I've seen so far is Alison Brie's character, Ruth. She's like a failing actress. She can't get parts. She goes to, audition after audition. She asks the lady, she's like, why do you always bring me in but don't ever give me parts? And the lady's like, well, I bring you in to show the directors that they don't actually want someone who's real. So like, she's kind of like failed, down in her dumps. She's single. You know, she's having an affair with someone else who's married. You know, like she's
Jeff Winger,
she's at the low of her low at this point. And she gets one more audition, and it's for this super abstract thing. The director's like, you guys are going to be wrestling on TV. And they don't really explain it more than that for the first episode.
It's
or
just
two.
The literally GLOW stands for Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling.
Yeah. So right now we're in the development phase of like they're going through the auditions because it's like a multiple day audition. She made the final cut, so now they're kind of seeing like who's going to train them because the director doesn't really know what he's doing. From what I've read so far is that there will be a lot of cameos from some famous wrestlers. The 80s, vibe.
Mark Maron is in this show.
Yeah. The 80s vibe is awesome. I love it. The soundtrack is fantastic. Everyone's doing really good. You know, like the acting is really good so far. I'm really enjoying it. It's, you know, it's cute. My favorite thing about it so far, though, is there's a really strong sense of like kind of women empowerment and feminism going on, like in a really good way. It paints a really good picture of how like women in auditions were treated in the 80s. It starts off with her auditioning for a part and she's reading the men's part on purpose. And they're like, well, that's not your part. And they, you know, they kind of all make fun of the fact that like in that time period, all these women who were actresses before couldn't get a part past like a receptionist or a secretary or a woman on a diet or something like that. And now they're all like these super strong fighting women. So it's really cool. I'm excited to see where it goes and see how some of these characters develop without getting rid of too much for you guys to see it. Highly recommend it. I think it's a really fun watch.
Ellen Wan from Scott Pilgrim's in that too, right?
I was about to say that was like her and Alison Brie are the reason I want to see this.
So she's listed in it yet. I haven't seen her in the first two episodes yet.
Okay.
Or maybe I just
haven't. She's built for 10 episodes. It's a 10 episode season, I believe.
Maybe I just haven't noticed her yet then. Maybe I'm thinking the wrong person.
I mean, she also, it's been a couple of years since Scott Pilgrim, so she may just look a little different, but this is now going to go on my watch list. So thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. The creators, Carly Mensch and Liz Waheave, have done some amazing shows. Some shows actually that like, Homeland, Nurse Jackie. I wasn't the biggest Weeds fan. They've worked on that and Orange is the New Black, for sure. So
I love Orange is the New Black.
Glowing producer credits. This is their show though. Through and through.
Huh? Did you do that on purpose? What? Glowing.
Glowing.
Glowing, yeah. Not on purpose, but you know, you'd think. So that's Glow. It's all streaming on Netflix now. And moving on. Our last mini review, it doesn't come out until July 14th, but I'm really excited to talk to you guys about Friends from College, a show that I'm working through right now. This is also going to be premiering on Netflix the whole season. And a lot more people know about this one than I thought. Nicholas Stoller created the show. He's made a lot of like some, you know, R comedies over the years. Mm-hmm. I think people know him best for like, you know, Neighbors. And this show stars Keegan-Michael Key in a major role. He also Kobe Smulders and Fred Savage, a few others. This show, the synopsis is a group of friends from Harvard. They get together and basically they're all like facing down their 40s. And, you have this one couple, Keegan-Michael Key and Kobe Smulders, who are, you know, they have like weird relationships with all of these friends, like this friend group. Like, it's kind of like a How I Met Your Mother group of friends almost. And like, this is like further down the road. Some of them have kids, some of them don't, some of them dated each other. There's still some of that like romantic tension there. The show kicks off with an affair between Keegan-Michael Key's character and a different character named Sam, played by Annie Priest. And she is like married to not one of the friends from college, but so there's already, it starts with like a weird love triangle, and it's really, it's an interesting show. It's I really like it because they really double down on the idea that they're like, these are 40-year-olds. These aren't, you know, 30-somethings living in New York trying to find love. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, they found love, but they also are trying to reconcile that with, you know, how nostalgic they feel for their lives in college and the love that they have for each other. That's kind of weird. And like, they kind of play up that sitcom trope of like, my friends are family. It is a slow burn of a show. I think that I've seen the first three episodes, and it takes a bit to get there. I think that the humor is pretty good. I think that this isn't a show that I would immediately recommend and say, you got to see this cultural conversation starter. It's a show that I think is going to be more resonant with some people than others. And I think that I think the best thing it has going for it is just really good writing, really, really good, like honest dialogue, honest, like situations that these characters find themselves in that are, you know, you actually feel for these characters who are doing terrible things and who are basically like very privileged people who just can't deal with the fact that they're way past their middle age. And it's interesting. It's an interesting show. It's one that I would recommend checking out the trailer. You'll be able to tell if it's for you, I think, at that point. And I think it's worth giving a couple episodes, see what you think.
You had me at Fred Savage.
Fred Savage is pretty great in this show. I highly recommend based on him And Kobe Smulders, though, was the highlight for me, actually, for this one. She steals a lot of her scenes. I think that she really has, like, broken away from her, like, Marvel and How I Met Your Mother roles and has just really sort of come into her own here. So highly recommend. And Keegan-Michael Key, surprisingly enough, does about the same thing. So we're checking out. Comes out July 14th, so in just a couple of weeks. And with that, that'll do it for our mini reviews. Thank you so much for listening to Cinemaholics. It's been actually we talked about Transformers so much that it was lean in terms of content, but I think it packed a punch. So thank you for sticking with us.
I agree.
For all of you who hate us for hating Transformers, we don't apologize. But we'll see you next week. Hopefully, we'll find more common ground. that was a very. I wish Will Ashton was watching Transformers so he could chime in, but he's not even going to check.
He would have hated your Batman versus Superman comparison, though.
Yeah. All right. Special thanks again to CJ. Please go check out his podcast, That Kind of Nerd. Is there anything else that you wanted to plug, CJ, while you're here?
We are wrapping up a second project where we broke down every episode of House of Cards of season 5. It's called Hey, Did You See? That's going to be premiering this Wednesday. It's a final installment for it. But yeah, go check out thatkindofnerd.com. That's where you can find all of our content and you can connect with us. And thank you again so much for having me on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
No problem. I thought the House of Cards thing was going to have like a weird name, like Nice to Meet You or something like that.
Glad you. It's showed. A show about television, and we just covered House of Cards. We did other ones, yeah.
Glad you show restraint in your content, unlike us. Don't forget, you can listen to Cinemaholics on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, on the We Got This Covered channel. You can check us out on Google Play, everywhere that you want to listen to the show or watch the show. Thank you for, this is our 20th episode, I think, or 21st.
Something like that. Yeah, we're getting there.
Thank you for that. Thank you for 20 episodes. And hopefully can do another 20 that are even better, I think is the goal. Let's say double is good. We'll see you guys again next week. Don't forget to write into the show. Send us your feedback. We will be going through your emails pretty soon.
Not even feedback, literally anything. Just you can email me hi, and questions. I will thank you for it.
And it helps. It does really help guide us, like on what you guys are looking for and what you want to hear from us. And we like talking to you. So cinemaholicspodcast@gmail.com. Check out the links below your cinema homework to stay in touch and to find Maverick and myself elsewhere on the internet. And with that, that's Cinemaholics. Thank you so much. From the internet, California, I'm John Agroni.
From the dial-up dungeon, broadband basement, whatever John wants to lock me up in this week, I am Soundmaster Maverick Hines.
And from the internet, Pennsylvania, I'm CJ Mellon.
Bye.
See you guys next time.